The Republicans should say, we want to take over. We should take over the voting in at least many, 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize the voting.
Really?
Oh, should they, sir?
Good luck with that.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Here I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. Always a delight to have you here, even as, yes, okay, it is starting to feel a whole lot like trench warfare at this point. And I think that's actually a good thing. Hear me out. Forward progress by the aggressors, yes, in this case, Donald Trump, the federal government, is being halted by the resistance forces. That would be you and me, in this case, the good guys, as one issue after another, one attack on the rule of law and the Constitution after another is being blocked in the federal and sometimes state courts. The good guys are not winning, to be clear, not winning every single battle, especially when some of those cases make it to Donald Trump's hand-picked, corrupted U.S. Supreme Court. But many, many of them are being won by the good guys in rulings from Democratic and Republican-appointed judges alike. Often even Donald Trump-appointed federal judges in the lower district courts. Trench warfare, of course, means that people in that war do get hurt, even killed. So here, since we're talking about metaphorical trench warfare, metaphorical legal battles, real legal battles, but metaphorical trench warfare, yes, every single case is not won. And even in cases that ultimately win, people do get hurt in the bargain, even literally killed along the way, as we have seen in recent weeks. But if you felt like there was no real resistance, nobody really fighting on behalf of the good guys, or that all of the powerful people, the big law firms and such, had rolled over to Donald Trump's attempted authoritarian takeover last year, well, from my vantage point at least, following many of the trench warfare legal battles in the courts each day, the administration is losing. Losing in case after case after case. They are being challenged on virtually every single front, and they are losing on virtually every front. It's like those ICE thugs we're seeing up there in Minneapolis. They can drive around wherever they want to do whatever targeted action they want, but the minute they step out of the car, there are folks following them. There are citizens following them and blowing whistles. So, yeah, they are being challenged in court on virtually every front, and they continue to lose. In some of those cases, many of them, in fact, they end up, of course, appealing up the chain of the federal courts, some of which overturn the lower court rulings, though most at the moment do not. And, of course, they're appealing with the goal to eventually land at Trump's very Trump-friendly Supreme Court. But while the court system, the legal system, tends to move much slower than the administration's violent violations of the rule of law and the Constitution, it can mean that they get away with quite a bit in the short term before brakes can be applied by the courts. But it also means that it takes quite a while, in most cases, for any of this to reach Trump's friendly U.S. Supreme Court, which means they are being blocked, at least for the short term, in case after case after case, which means they are losing for now in case after case after case. We've got one such example for you later in the show in Desi Doyen's latest Green News report.
Yes.
Hello, Desiree.
Hey.
Where now a fifth federal judge in a fifth court in a fifth case attempting to reverse Donald Trump's unlawful halt of major offshore wind projects instituted during the Biden administration, already underway, already billions of dollars spent on them, have ended in failure for the president, who wants to stop all wind projects. Because one of them, many, many years ago, would have, as he saw it, ruined the seaside view for wealthy golf patrons at one of his courses that he owned in Scotland. So ever since then, we all have to endure his nonsense about windmills causing cancer and killing bald eagles and whales and whatever idiocy that he needs to rewrite reality about wind energy and his belief that it somehow has devalued his golf course in Scotland. But of course, that is just one, or I guess five, examples of many such cases where he is losing in the face of legal challenges in case after case. He has lost every single one of those cases for every single wind farm, offshore wind farm that he tried to shut down. And because the administration is being blocked by the courts in case after case after case, it means that Trump and his henchmen, well, in response, they lash out even more, which makes them, you know, more dangerous. But it also makes them do some really dumb things in the bargain. And that, of course, you know, while it makes them more dangerous in many cases, it also makes their anti-constitutional, extra-legal schemes even sloppier and even easier then to stop in the courts, which eventually makes them, at least to some extent, in some cases, back down or back off. It's why Kristi Noem, for example, is now ordering all of the Border Patrol goons in Minneapolis to wear body cameras during their so-called enforcement actions, with a vague promise to expand the program in the future. It's why Trump is moving his Himmler wannabe goon, Greg Bovino, out of Minneapolis entirely, replacing him with, another criminal buffoon for now, Tom Homan, sure. But he is not moving forward. He is, at best, in this campaign, moving sideways, or in many cases, moving back entirely. It's why Trump is giving up the ghost on support for a number of his unlawfully appointed U.S. attorneys like Lindsey Halligan and Alina Haba. It's why Ed Martin, who calls himself Eagle Ed, the right-wing activist, Republican election conspiracist, lawyer, and former election official, actually, from Missouri, the man who Trump realized several months ago that he would never be able to confirm even in his very friendly U.S. Senate as a U.S. attorney. So he was first demoted to a few other positions at DOJ as a deputy attorney general, as head of the administration's so-called weaponization workforce, work group, whatever it's called, and as Trump's pardon attorney. Well, as of yesterday, Eagle Ed was reportedly stripped of his position at the weaponizations group and as a deputy AG, with reporting that he will soon be out of the DOJ altogether. As things go more and more poorly, the fascists get sloppier and more desperate and, in the bargain, easier to oppose in the court of law and in the court of public opinion, where Trump's approval ratings, even among supporters now, continues to erode day by day by day, which I hope to get to a little bit later as well today. His takeover of the Kennedy Center was such a disaster that he is now going to just shut it down entirely and pretend it's for, renovations, and perhaps even tear it down physically, as he did with the East Wing of the White House. But that, too, like the destruction of the East Wing, will be challenged in court. It is now trench warfare at this point, metaphorical. But as the people of Ukraine, now facing actual deadly trench warfare for years now in defense of their sovereign state against the fascist aggressors of neighboring Russia, trench warfare, while deadly, is actually a win when it comes to stopping a more powerful, better equipped invader. And to that end, Donald Trump is now daily a loser, day after day after day. So naturally, he and his supporters become more hostile and more sloppy in the bargain, which means it's even easier for judges to then call them out and halt the worst of their ill-considered actions. And it's why, day after day, we're able to share such reprimands for the ages from these federal judges. Like I said, Democratic and Republican appointees alike. Yesterday, we covered the judge who absolutely upbraided the Trump administration and DHS and ICE for using 5-year-old Liam Ramos as bait to try and abduct his mother in Minneapolis before Liam and his father were then sent off to a prison camp in Texas and eventually freed over the weekend at the order of the federal judge who just sort of ripped the administration a new one. Today, once again, another turn in the barrel for DHS Secretary Kristi Noem in the face of Trump's attempt to end temporary protected status, or TPS, for hundreds of thousands of Haitian immigrants afforded protected refugee status here in the U.S. after a number of different natural disasters in their homeland. It was those Haitians, in fact, that Donald Trump was famously lying about as eating the dogs and eating the cats.
And don't forget, Vice President Vance also joined in on that lie.
Yep. And that's who they were talking about. They were talking about the Haitian immigrants with temporary protected status in Springfield, Ohio during the 2024 campaign. But like the windmills obstructing the view of Trump's golf course, it was all stuff and nonsense, but he has to pretend it's true no matter how many years later. So he's tried to end protected status for hundreds of thousands of Haitians who are living lawfully in this country, many of them for many, many years, but who would be immediately subject to immediate removal by Trump's ICE goons after the official lifting of protected status. Well, a U.S. circuit court judge put a stop to that, for now at least, on Monday, taking the obnoxious racism involved in all of this, as expressed by Kristi Noem, to task in the bargain. As David Kurtz reports at Morning Memo today, the top line here is that U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes of D.C. temporarily blocked the Trump administration from ending protections for more than 350,000 Haitian immigrants in the United States. In doing so, she averted, at least for now, a feared draconian roundup of Haitians who have been legally in the United States. Of particular concern was that the Trump administration would target Springfield, Ohio's Haitian community in the same way that it did with racist rhetoric and fear-mongering during the 2024 campaign, except this time with masked and armed federal agents doing it. Beyond the top line, he reports, what made Judge Reyes's ruling here especially memorable was the way that she obliterated the Trump administration's arguments and zeroed in on DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, ruling that it, quote, seems substantially likely, an understatement really, that Noem terminated the humanitarian protections for Haitians because of her, quote, hostility to non-white immigrants. Judge Reyes began by, by juxtaposing a 1783 letter that was penned by George Washington, comparing it to a 2025 tweet by Kristi Noem. starts this way. Memorandum opinion. On December 2, 1783, then Commander-in-Chief George Washington penned, quote, "America is open to receive not only the opulent and respected stranger, but the oppressed and persecuted of all nations and religions," unquote. More than two centuries later, writes the judge, Congress reaffirmed President Washington's vision by establishing the Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, program. It provides humanitarian relief to foreign nationals in the United States who come from disaster-stricken countries. It also brings in substantial revenue, with TPS holders generating $5.2 billion in taxes annually. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has a different take, the judge wrote before posting a screenshot of a tweet from December 1, 2025 from Kristi Noem, which reads, quote, "I just met the president. I am recommending a full travel ban on every damn country that's been flooding our nations with killers, leeches, and entitlement junkies. Our forefathers," like George Washington, Kristi, "our forefathers built this nation on blood, sweat, and the unyielding love of freedom, not for foreigners to slaughter our heroes, suck dry our hard-earned tax dollars, or snatch the benefits owed to Americans," in all caps. "We don't want them," she concluded in her tweet in all caps, adding, in all caps, "not one." Well, ouch, has anyone told forefathers like George Washington about this? Sounds like he would be puzzled by that tweet. From there, writes Kurtz, the ruling was a bloodbath for Noem, but Judge Reyes wasn't done. She concluded the 83-page opinion with a flourish by circling back to the scurrilous Noem tweet, writing, quote, "There is an old adage among lawyers, if you have the facts on your side, pound the facts. If you have the law on your side, pound the law. If you have neither, pound the table." Secretary Noem, she wrote, the record to date shows, does not have the facts on her side, or at least has ignored them, does not have the law on her side, or at least has ignored it. Having neither and bringing the adage into the 21st century, she pounds X, formerly known as Twitter. Kristi Noem, writes the judge, has a First Amendment right to call immigrants killers, leeches, and entitlement junkies, and any other inapt name that she wants. Secretary Noem, however, is constrained by both our Constitution and the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act, to apply faithfully the facts to the law in implementing the TPS program. The record to date shows she has yet to do that. And with that, Judge Reyes ordered the protections for Haitians remain in place, at least while the case proceeds. The Trump administration is all but guaranteed, of course, to appeal Reyes's decision. We wish them nothing but the best of luck in that. But at this point, you know, I could read three or four such excoriations against the administration each day from federal judges. They are losing far more than they are winning, at least in those lower court rulings, and they are not happy about it. So where are they, failing, where they're failing in their crackdowns on the streets and in the courts? It seems Donald Trump now hopes to move instead to the ballot box. Here he was on Monday, I believe, with the now former Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino, the former Fox News MAGA podcasting dude who knew nothing about heading up the FBI when he was appointed to do so by Donald Trump, and who recently resigned from the job so that I guess he could get back to podcasting. And here in full is what Trump had to say on Bongino's show, that is, I suppose, understandably freaking out a lot of folks today regarding a federal, quote, takeover of elections in the midterms, actually a Republican takeover of elections in the midterms, in which Republicans are otherwise likely to see a bloodbath of their own, given how wildly unpopular they now are as we were reminded once again over the weekend when a Democratic candidate for a special election for the state Senate down in a very red district of Texas defeated his Republican opponent there by 14 points in a district that Donald Trump won by 17 points just over 1 year ago. It's a 31-point swing toward the Democrats deep in the reddest heart of Texas. So I'm going to play Trump's remarks here on Bongino's show so you can hear them, and then I'll break them down sort of point by point. But since it's a whole bunch of stuff and nonsense that is either unlawful or unconstitutional or simply just wrong on every fact, I do want you to know that in advance before I give a minute or two of your public airwaves to his blatant lies and unconstitutional, unlawful nonsense. Just know it's stuff and nonsense, and I will explain all of that on the other side.
These people were brought to our country to vote, and they vote illegally. And the, you know, amazing that the Republicans aren't tougher on it. The Republicans should say, we want to take over. We should take over the voting in at least many, 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize the voting. And we have states that are so crooked and they're counting votes. We have states that I won that show I didn't win. Now you're going to see something in Georgia where they were able to get with a court order, the ballots. You're going to see some interesting things come out. But, you know, like the 2020 election, I won that election by so much. Everybody does it. They put a woman in jail, Colorado, put a woman in jail, a wonderful woman, 72 years old, had cancer, because she was a voting inspector. She was in charge of a voting area, and she saw boxes of votes come in. So she went over to check it, and they put her in jail for voter manipulation, and she's still in jail. And they better let her out fast, and they're suffering a big price, Colorado. They have this woman in jail who's 71 years old and probably has cancer. She's sick. And they put her in because she challenged somebody that was dumping ballots into a box, okay? And they didn't put them in jail. This was during Biden's term. The worst president in history.
Okay, so a whole lot of stuff and nonsense there.
All of that was lies.
All of it. So, but we need to work backwards here a little bit. For one, that woman they put in jail, well, she was not put in jail by Joe Biden or his administration. It was actually a state case against her in Colorado. She was not a, what did he say, a judge of elections or whatever he said. She was actually the Mesa County clerk, the Mesa County, Colorado clerk. She was the county's top election official. She's in charge, was in charge of elections in Mesa County. And there was nobody, even alleged to my knowledge, to have been dumping a big box of ballots in there or whatever he said, a big fake box of ballots. So Tina Peters, the formerly elected Mesa County County, Colorado clerk, is currently serving 9 years in state prison for having, among other things, created a fake ID for a MAGA election conspiracist after the 2020 election, snuck into the Mesa County secure Mesa County room where they keep the voting systems and tabulators in the middle of the night with that guy with whom she had made this fake ID. She turned off the security cameras in this room, and she made thereafter unlawful copies of the voting system software used in Mesa County and in a whole bunch of other jurisdictions around the country. And then she released that highly sensitive software, proprietary voting system software, to the public over the internet during a Mike Lindell election conspiracy event that she was participating in. And then she lied about all of it and obstructed the investigation into it. And she was eventually held accountable for it. That's why she is in jail. And even though Trump issued a pardon for her, it's meaningless because a federal pardon has no actual effect on state law and state convictions, which is what she violated and why she is serving 9 years in prison. And clearly he pardoned her without having even the slightest clue what Tina Peters actually did. But he knows that she's a MAGA lady, so it's an outrage that she's in jail despite violating the law in, you know, 10 different ways from Sunday. That's why she's in jail. And even though you know, a federal pardon has no effect on state law. That's why she's serving 9 years in prison. And clearly he has no idea. And he's ever since been threatening Colorado if they don't release her with all sorts of things ever since, if they don't let her out of jail, including, among other things, the closure of the Federal Center for the National Center for Atmospheric Research, or NCAR, a national treasure with hundreds of scientists doing critical research for decades, because he's mad that Colorado won't let Tina Peters out of jail for her election fraud crimes, which he thinks are something totally different from what they actually are. I will get to the Republicans need to nationalize elections point. I'll get to that in a moment, but don't take my word for it on the Peters explanation. Here's Colorado's excellent Kyle Clark, anchor of NBC affiliate News 9 in Denver, responding to the Tina Peters part of Trump's idiotic remarks.
President Trump today directly linked his retaliation against Colorado to his political ally Tina Peters being in prison here for leading a breach of election system security. And Trump's latest comments about her case call into question whether the president even knows what Peters did to land her in prison and unleash his retribution on Colorado.
She was in charge of a voting area, and she saw boxes of votes come in. So she went over to check it, and they put her in jail for voter manipulation, and she's still in jail. And they better let her out fast, and they're suffering a big price, Colorado. They have this woman in jail who's 71 years old, and probably has cancer. She's sick. And they put her in because she challenged somebody that was dumping ballots into a box, okay? And they didn't put them in jail.
What President Trump said there is almost entirely, like word for word, false. Have no idea where he is getting this story about Tina Peters challenging someone dumping ballots into a box. We have covered Peters for 5 years and have never heard anyone claim that. What Peters did is well established. Even her own legal team admits it. They just say that it was justified. Peters snuck a hacker around security protocols using another person's ID so that hacker could make a copy of election systems. She's not in jail for voter manipulation, like President Trump said, whatever that means. She's in jail on 4 felonies and 3 misdemeanors for her role in that election systems breach, which did not impact any actual votes. Trump also claims that Peters probably has cancer. She had cancer years ago. Recently, she had a cough, which her lawyer says has improved. All of this to say, it is not clear if President Trump knows what Tina Peters did to land in prison, leading to his campaign of retaliation against Colorado, where he's withheld disaster funding, tried to freeze federal spending here, vetoed a clean drinking water project, relocated a military command, and is closing a major science lab.
It's very clear that he knows absolutely nothing about what happened with Tina Peters, other than, you know, she supports him, and that's all he cares about. By the way, there's video out there recently, security camera video from inside the jail showing Tina Peters grabbing a woman by the throat and trying to choke her. So she's
classy, real charmer.
Yeah, even she's no good even in jail. As to the other part of Trump's remarks that are understandably freaking a lot of people out today, that, quote, the Republicans should say we want to take over, we should take over the voting in at least many 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize voting. All because he can't get over the fact that he lost the 2020 election, the way that he can't get over that they built a wind farm near his golf course in Scotland 20 years ago. And of course, it's because all sorts of non-citizens, right, were brought into this country by Joe Biden to vote in the 2020 election, which, by the way, who was president again during the 2020 election? Oh, yeah, that was Donald Trump, wasn't it? And then Joe Biden, you know, brought all sorts of non-citizens into the country to vote, but Donald Trump won the 2024 presidency after Joe Biden did that. Sure, all of this makes total sense. And by the way, Dan Bongino is just sitting there like a stump throughout all of this. The man who, until about 5 minutes ago, was the second most powerful person in the FBI, just under the dopey Cash Patel. Bongino knows that none of this stuff is actually true. If it was, he would have had the power to bring charges against this, you know, this pretend person who brought boxes of ballots into the Mesa County, Colorado, or the millions of non-citizens who are unlawfully voting, or anything else. If there was any evidence of any of these crimes related to stealing the election for Joe Biden in 2020, but Bongino did not do that because it's all a Trump fantasy, and Dan Bongino knows it, which is why he sat there like a stump as Trump was allowed to natter on with one lie after another on his show. For the record, over the past 2 or 3 weeks on this program, I should say even for the past 20 years, but specifically for the last couple of weeks, we've been covering in state after state after cross-checking more than 50 million voters from the state voter rolls with federal immigration databases, Republicans and the Trump administration have been able to find virtually zero non-citizens actually on the voting rolls. And of the handful that they have found, most of them have never voted. Now, that was known, of course, before Trump took office a second time. For example, a 2024 audit by Georgia's Secretary of State, Republican Secretary of State, found that there were just 20 of 8.2 million people registered to vote in Georgia who were not citizens, and only 9 of them had ever actually voted. 9 out of 8.2 million. But as to Trump's call to nationalize elections or have the Republicans take over elections in 15 places, whatever that means, whatever, wherever those are. Well, understandably, people are freaked out when they hear that. You should know that, in fact, the president of the United States, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Abraham Lincoln or George frickin' Washington, the president of the United States has no power, none, zero, to nationalize any election, which are run by the states, period, end of story. So he can say whatever he wants. He can threaten whatever he wants. But there is no secret provision somewhere in the law that would allow him to somehow, you know, trigger the federalization, the nationalization of our elections, to allow a president to take them over somehow. There is no such thing. So if his comments scare you, I certainly understand. But that is what he is hoping to do. He is hoping to scare you. Don't let him scare you. Now, on the other hand, he can, put troops in the streets for specious reasons and hope that that will frighten people away from voting on Election Day. And that's a very real threat and something that he can at least try to do. And whether the courts could react quickly enough to prevent him from doing so, that's a question that remains to be seen. But he has no secret power to nationalize elections somehow. Zero, nada, none. It's not a thing. In a piece over at Talking Points Memo today, Josh Marshall details how it is the states who have the power in elections and in a whole bunch of other things that it has taken them actually a while to figure out and to marshal that power and to realize they have it in the pushback against the fascist federal invasion of the United States of America. I'll link to his piece in full when I post today's show tonight at bradblog.com, but he concludes this way in regards to what he details as the, quote, latent, underused, and often underappreciated sovereign authority of the states. Josh writes, the promise of the American democratic experiment now resides in the free states of the Union. They cannot accede to the illegitimate actions of a renegade executive. He says, I remain mostly optimistic about the prospects of a free and fair 2026 election, but that's because of the structural impediments blocking the federal government from preventing one. From preventing a free and fair election, and because of the strength of civic democratic traditions in American political culture, ones which are already showing themselves and turning the public strongly against the administration. The forces of small d democratic action are simply stronger than the criminal ones in the Trump White House. But, he correctly warns, nothing can be taken for granted. For that strength to be meaningful and decisive, it will have to be mobilized, which, of course, is why we talk about what we talk about dang near every day on this program over your public airwaves, to help mobilize that, to help mobilize democracy. And I believe that the people are mobilized and that they are at least holding the line in this ongoing trench warfare and often winning and pushing the invaders back. I believe that we will continue to do so and that we should do so without fear, even with our eyes wide open. And to that point, to quote another famous president, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And don't give these fascist invaders even that much, because that's what they want. More on the people mobilizing and winning and how we can help with an assist from Saturday Night Live this week. That's next. Plus, our latest Green News report, all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That brings back memories. I believe the first iteration of the broadcast way, way, way back when. We called it the Brad Show. It was on Saturday night. It was 4 hours long, and that was our theme song, as I recall. Anyway, all right, welcome back. A Saturday Night Live sketch from this past weekend is apparently going viral since Saturday night for a couple of reasons. Mostly, I suspect, because it's very funny, but it also hits home, I suspect, for a lot of Americans right now. I think it will play for the most part on radio, I think. I want to share it with you here. But just to set the visual scene for you, it's a family living room of a white suburban couple. Dad is in his recliner. The couple's four teenage-ish kids are sitting on the couch, and mom stands next to them with clearly something troubling on her mind.
Well, thanks, kids, for flying in to come see your old mom and dad.
Oh, of course, Dad.
Oh, we love you. We love you.
Oh, well, should we head to the restaurant? I'm starving.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Wait. Wait, there's something I need to tell you all first.
Oh, okay. What is it, Mom?
Is everything okay? I'm only gonna say it if after I do, you promise you will not react. No talking, no faces, no nothing.
Mom, what is going on?
Yeah, you're scaring us. The thing I'm going to say is shocking. And it's gonna make you want to react. But I need you to promise that you will not.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Let's do a practice example. I eat bugs. I eat bugs.
Mom, what?
No. What did I say?
Sorry.
No speaking, no talking, no nothing. Okay, let's try again. Pretend example. My butt fell off. Can't find it. I don't have a butt. Okay, good. What I have to tell you is I may have changed my mind about Trump.
What?
You want this to be real or not?
Yes.
Well, sure.
I feel now like he might be bad for our country.
Oh, yeah, you got it! What'd I say?
I'm sorry, Mom. You've got to be joking.
We've been saying this since 2016.
Oh, I'm sorry I'm late to the perfect party. Do you guys want this to be real or not?
Yes, absolutely.
Be real.
Then give me grace. I feel like maybe some of the things he says aren't true.
Oh, I'm going back. Bye. I take it back.
Mom, come on. Don't do that.
Guys, come on. Can't you see this is hard for your mother? Also, I want to remind everybody it is my birthday.
And Greg, we are going to get to that. And for the record, you little brats, I do still think he's a good businessman.
Mom,
you know what? This is why nobody likes your side. You think you know everything with your matcha, rapping Hamilton, and your IUDs. Just have kids already.
What are you talking about?
Maybe we could talk about this at Red Robin. I'm afraid they're going to give our table away, and I want my birthday scoop.
Okay, Mom, we're sorry. Well, be quiet. Just say what you need to say.
Fine. But I swear to God, if I hear a single I told you so, I will go see the Melania movie tonight. You hear me?
Okay,
we're
stop.
We're serious this time, really.
Then I will speak. The things that are happening, no one could have seen coming. I feel like the way they talk about guns is different for different people. They made me feel worried about trans people. But now I'm realizing I don't really get what the problem is. I'm starting to wonder if drag queens are actually hilarious.
Oh, stop that! I see what you're doing! Stop it!
Enough, enough! Leave your mother alone. Her laptop is old. She gets a different internet than you.
That is how that works. And this is vulnerable for me, okay? You should understand. What did I say when you came out?
You said, is it possible you just like hats?
Still waiting on the answer, babe.
Please stop getting your mother worked up, or she won't dance for me tonight.
It's his birthday.
You wouldn't be here without it.
Okay, relax. Mom, we're sorry. You're right. We shouldn't have made this hard for you, and we're happy that you told us.
Yeah.
We're sorry.
Thanks, Mom.
All right. Let's get to dinner. Plenty of room in the Cybertruck.
Sell that car!
Are you kidding me? Never!
So that was Saturday Night Live last Saturday night. As noted, that sketch has been going viral, but I think it's not just because it's funny, which it is, but because there's a whole lot of truth to it right now. And there are a lot of Trump supporters out there sort of carefully coming to terms with that fact that, hey, maybe I made a mistake. And as we've discussed a bit on this show in recent weeks and months, frankly, though I know there may be some who disagree with me here, who think that folks should be, you know, held to account for their vote, for what they did, I actually think it's important to leave space to leave, as Rich Loges, the former MAGA guy who created the Leaving MAGA organization to help other people leave that cult that Loges now knows that he was a part of, to sort of leave open the off-ramp to those who realize that they really blew it by voting for that guy. You agree, Desiree?
Oh, of course. Yes, absolutely.
Now, for the record, in his own analysis coverage of the sketch on Saturday, Aaron Blake at CNN observes that the satire, that sketch, has partisan bite. But how much does this mother reflect reality? Well, it certainly appears that more and more Trump voters are coming to a similarly skeptical place, he says. Though it's not clear how many of them were truly MAGA to begin with, and they generally express their emotions more subtly than the full-on regret that Trump's critics have long sought. But Blake notes a number of polls have gotten at this question in various ways in recent weeks. A Pew Research Center poll, for one, suggested significant erosion in Trump's support on the right. The survey showed 20% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents said that the Trump administration has been, quote, worse than expected. Perhaps more strikingly, he says, it showed that the percentage of those of these voters who said that they support all or most of Trump's policies, dropping from 67% back in February of 25 to just 56% in late January. So that's a 12% drop. I should say just a 12% drop, but it is a noteworthy number. If it's reflected in this year's midterms, it would be a wipeout for Republicans, a 12% drop like that. Fox News and New York Times Siena College polls, Blake continues, both recently broke out data on 2024 Trump voters, and the detractors were in many cases significant. In the Fox poll, 16% of Trump voters said they disapproved of his job performance as president. But it got worse from there. The survey also tested a dozen specific issues, and on 10 of the 12, everything except border security and immigration, Trump's disapproval ratings among his 2024 voters was north of 20%. It was at least 25% on half of those issues. That's significant, he argues, to have one in four or one in five Trump voters so consistently on a different page than the president. From the Times Siena poll, 17% of Trump voters described his first year back in office as, quote, unsuccessful, including 9% who said it was very unsuccessful. 16% said Trump's first year back has been worse than they expected. 16% cited a negative emotion when asked to describe how they felt about it. So what does all of this tell us? Blake asks. Well, it suggests that people might be understandably reluctant to say that they disapprove of Trump when you asked for a straight up or down verdict. But the disapproval shows up even more when you dig a little bit deeper and ask about specific things. The data suggests that Trump voters could actually be underselling their overall disenchantment with him to some degree. They might not be full-on regretful or disapproving, but they seem to be coming to certain realizations about what Trump is doing, a lot like that mother in that sketch. But he says, just like the mother in the sketch, they might be apprehensive about admitting that to those around them or even to a pollster. After all, nobody likes to admit that they were wrong, especially when the other side is so annoying about it. Which seems a bit unfair shot at the so-called other side there, but I think his point is well taken.
I think he's pulling it from the SNL sketch, too.
Believe it or not, in the past 2 weeks, I have myself heard from several of our hate listeners who contact me. And I've heard from them with a decidedly different tone, even an apologetic one in at least one case. So good. Yeah, I think that's good. I think it's important to leave space on the off-ramp for those folks like that mother. Because frankly, fighting fascism, we are all learning, ain't easy. So we can all use all the help that we can get. And sometimes Trump supporters, former Trump supporters, can be among the most effective soldiers in that fight. So give them space, says me. Quick break, and we are back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Your turn, Des. Are you ready?
Of course.
All right.
Let's get to it.
Our latest Green News Report.
There is a shadow here on my ground. 6 more weeks of winter abound.
Brutal Arctic cold likely to persist through February. And yes, it is linked to climate change, not groundhogs. Western states facing a record-setting snow drought. Plus,
a federal judge today cleared the way for New York offshore wind projects to resume construction.
Courts have now restarted 5 out of 5 offshore wind farms halted by the Trump administration.
And 5 out of 5 ain't bad. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The president posted on Truth Social, record cold wave expected to hit 40 states. Please explain whatever happened to global warming, suggesting that the two are divorced from one another. What does he need to know?
How about anything? This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, it happens like clockwork every year. It gets cold outside, and Donald Trump and Fox News ask, whatever happened to global warming? Because they're idiots, of course. You're not an idiot. What do you have for us today?
Yes, it's kind of like Groundhog Day over and over again.
Yes, it is.
And on Groundhog Day on Monday, the groundhog known as Punxsutawney Phil in Pennsylvania saw his shadow, portending 6 more weeks of winter. Not surprising at all to anyone in the South still suffering from freezing temperatures. And a bomb cyclone, that's a rapidly intensifying storm, delivered freezing temperatures over the weekend from the Gulf Coast to New England, smacking Florida with record cold and rare snow and dumping the biggest snowfall in decades in North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yes, some areas got an entire winter's worth of snow in one day for a region whose infrastructure simply is not built for it. And yes, the extreme cold is linked to man-made climate change.
What?
Driven by the burning of fossil fuels, which is intensifying extreme weather events of all kinds, bringing bouts of really weird weather. The Arctic, specifically, is warming faster than the rest of the planet. That is causing the Arctic's polar vortex winds to stretch out of whack, spilling frigid Arctic air far to the south, like opening your freezer door. Forecasters say that freezer door will remain wide open through much of February.
Although not down in Australia, where it's about 120 degrees.
Yep.
That's what happened to global warming, you numbskull.
Tens of thousands of people in the South are still without power after a previous deadly winter storm blanketed states in heavy ice and deep cold. The overwhelming driver of the outages was weather-related damage to distribution, like downed power lines. Some natural gas plants were knocked offline due to frozen equipment. Wind and solar sources performed just fine.
Huh.
However, Electrek reports that, like clockwork, there has been a coordinated surge of disinformation across social media attempting to falsely blame renewable energy for the outages.
They do it every time.
Yep. Storm victims will likely have to wait longer than ever before to receive disaster relief funding from FEMA. Internal DHS documents obtained by the New York Times show that there is now a months-long $17 billion backlog, the largest in U.S. history, due to new hurdles instituted by DHS Secretary Kristi Noem. Noem has stalled funds already approved by regional FEMA offices for recovery and critical repairs to infrastructure. Noem's obstruction incensed retiring Republican U.S. Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina.
To give you an idea of how incompetent I think she is, she actually thought FEMA should be eliminated.
She wanted to drag FEMA down to the gravel pit and put a bullet in its head.
Speaking of extremes, simultaneously out in the U.S. West, there is a snow drought amid a weird winter heat wave with little snowfall. Precipitation is falling as rain, not snow. The extent of snow-covered ground across western states has hit a new record low. That is hitting winter tourism areas hard and raising concerns for states that rely on mountain snowpack for crops and drinking water in summer.
Oh, that's what happened in global warming, too.
And finally, a federal judge on Monday struck down the Trump Interior Department's stop work order on a multi-billion dollar wind farm already under construction off the coast of New York State. The judge found that the government had failed to show that offshore wind is such an imminent national security risk that it must be halted. It's the fifth of five stalled wind projects that courts have restarted in the Trump administration's campaign to kill the nation's offshore wind industry.
He's lost five out of five times. There was a whole bunch of huzzas over at Fox News when he said he was canceling offshore wind. I bet they haven't told him he's lost in every single case. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Well, I take it back. I think we've been too optimistic throughout this entire show. Optimism is the real problem we have around here.
Trying to fight fascism, you need to have some optimism.
Well, you do. You do. If you can have fun fighting fascism, what can you have fun at? That's what I say. All right, we got to get out. Thank you very much to Desiree Doyen, our producer. Well done, Desiree. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com, where, of course, you can share it with your friends, your neighbors, those you love and or hate. You can drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Always good to hear from you, whether you love or hate me. And you can find me on the social medias, including Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.